Hi, welcome to Evidence here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox.
And I'm Roshanik Jabari.
On today's show, we are going to be talking to Jerry Trentham. She's the Artistic Director of Pounds Per Square Inch Performance, and we'll be talking about Four Mad Humors, which takes place November the 2nd to 5th at the Theater Center. Also, choreographer Serge Benetton, former Artistic Director of Dance Makers, talks about his award-winning remount of Sand, a homage to his father's Algerian heritage, which will be part of the Ahmed Hazan Strange Music and Abilities Festival, which takes place October the 1st to 22nd at the Betty Oliphant Theater. But first off, we have Kate Franklin, Heather Barry McPhail, right, here to talk about William Yonge's production of Eight Ways from Mara. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
Let's start by talking a bit about William Yonge first with you guys, about his work, basically, in the Ohm projects. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, William is the artistic director of his own company called Zata Ohm Dance Projects. And this company is fairly new. I think he's about 6 years old. William, of course, before that was a dancer with Toronto Dance Theatre, and before that trained a lot in the UK and danced with very famous people such as Matthew Bourne, and had a wonderful career with really great bosses. And so he...
Handlers?
Yeah. He started this company, and he's very interested in multimedia stuff. Like, I would say one trademark of the company is always using original score, beautiful videography, like video images, and all these things are quite well integrated into his productions.
Heather?
And the show next week, Eight Ways from Mara, is his second full-length production. Frames happened about
2009?
Yeah, 2009 was his first full-length production. Mm-hmm.
How would you describe William Yonge's approach to choreography? You guys, Heather particularly there, I always see in very visceral, hard-driving productions, right? Sometimes I get exhausted watching you and wonder how can you keep doing this, you know? Like, you know. So how would you describe William Yonge as a choreographer?
Kind of in that same way, really often really hard-hitting and visceral, super, super physical work. I think he often comes in with an idea or a plan of what he wants to get across, but not necessarily a plan with the movement. So I think the work that he makes is really tailored to the dancers that he has in the process. Quite often, and with this process and with others, the dancers in some of the creative part are not necessarily in the performance, which actually makes it really interesting to sometimes relearn choreography that was created on another dancer. But I think he approaches things first and foremost in a really physical way, even though he does a lot of mixed media in his shows. I know that dance and movement is still kind of at the forefront for how he wants to get his message across.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's sort of backtrack a little bit. I'm curious to know about your own dance backgrounds and how you met William and how you became part of this project and the company.
Okay. So I started dance in North Bay at age 4, and ended up at the Quinty Ballet School in Belleville, Ontario for about 5 years, and then moved out to Vancouver for a couple of years. I was a mentor student at Ballet British Columbia, and then I made a transition the following year to become a contemporary dancer. So I started to just take tons of open class and really get into that world a little bit, get myself known. Moved to Toronto. I was an intern at Toronto Dance Theatre, where William was a company member. So that was in 2001. 02, something, probably 01. And so William and I met there, and I guess we first worked together for Frames. So I Facebooked William, and I said, "William, I love your stuff. If you ever have a chance to hire me, please do." And he said, "Great." And that's how William Yonge and I became
collaborators.
Yeah, collaborators. Yeah. So, and Frames was a wonderful experience, so I was eager to get involved with Eight Ways from Mara as well.
I originally am from Alberta, so I trained there mostly in ballet and starting into contemporary before I moved out here. I went to the School of Toronto Dance Theatre, and like Kate, I was an intern with the company right after. I met William pretty much through school. He was teaching at the school and choreographing on the students. So I started working with him, I think, when I was in second year. Like I mentioned before, as part of a creative process, but not part of the performance. So that's kind of where our relationship started. And it was kind of on and off like that a little bit over the years. And then this is the first process that has come to fruition, and I am performing in as well.
So you were both in Frames then?
No, I wasn't
you
in Frames.
Okay, you.
No.
Okay, so I'm curious to know how you think, from your perspective, how has his choreographic process evolved or changed, if at all, from that piece until... Because this is his second full-length mm-hmm. piece, right?
Yeah, this has been quite different from Frames. My experience with Frames actually was a little different because I, as Heather's been talking about, how William often works with different dancers for his initial processes than the final cast. I was the final cast, but not involved in some of the earlier creation parts of Frames. So this Eight Ways from Mara I've been in from the very beginning. So that mm-hmm. already is kind of different, a kind of more
involved.
Rich experience, mm-hmm. I guess. We have, with Eight Ways from Mara, the video component is quite strongly integrated, more than Frames, I would say. So there's actually a lot that the dancers are going to only find out next week when Tech Week starts. Like, it's almost like, you know, it's like if you're acting in a movie that has, like, your co-star is a cartoon character or something. Like, it's kind of that thing. Like, we don't actually know what the whole piece really looks like. We're, like, missing an essential component.
So
we get
into
the
theater. So
you
got a green screen on
yeah,
stage
yeah,
and you're sort interacting
of,
with the screen.
Sort of. So, you know, like, we're going to all be quite surprised, I think, next week when we get into theater and see... this other really strong, well, it's like another performer, really, this video element. So that is really interesting, and that's quite different from Frames.
But isn't that hard to do, interacting with somebody that isn't
well,
something?
Well, it won't be a somebody,
well,
it'll be a something.
Yeah, but
yeah.
The image does yeah. affect you.
I think so. I think it's going to add another layer. I think it's going to affect us in a good way. I think it'll inform us a bit more. So we're all looking forward to that.
So can you tell us now a little bit about the work itself?
So Eight Ways from Mara, the title alludes to Mara is the demon of temptation, I believe, in Buddhist teachings. So the theory of his work kind of stemmed from confusion, distraction, and temptation, and from those kind of older spiritual teachings and then how that translates to modern day. So what kind of things are confusing, distracting, and tempting us now? So there's a lot of religious imagery and a lot of comment on technological influence in our society today.
Mm-hmm. So I guess with the concept of temptation, you guys had a lot to draw on.
mm-hmm.
Right?
yes, we did. And we played a lot with... using those things to create movement as well, so doing improvs based on those three words. He also used, we have different sections in the piece, there's one called Forest of Desire, and again that was from old Buddhist writings, so a lot of what he'd read before has kind of filtered into okay. the work now.
Mm-hmm. So how do you take elemental forces like confusion, distraction, and temptation and then choreograph them based on what you were saying, Buddhism? I immediately think of sort of meditative, religious type movement. Mm-hmm. How would you describe his working with these forces within your bodies?
Well, I think a lot of it came from some of it came from our bodies themselves. I mean, a lot of it was based on improvisation. So we were working with the idea of trying to distract another dancer while the other dancer was doing like a set number of movements, and this would change how that dancer, if you distract someone, they're going to perform things a bit differently. And how do you get in their face? How do you disorient someone? How do you use your physicality but also your words? Like, there's a little bit of that's another big change from Frames. There's a lot of text in this show. So how can you say something that will totally throw somebody off? We played with everything, not just in the body, but with our voice as well this time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I would just say to that, distract somebody, but that would throw everybody off by complete improv suddenly when it was supposed to be choreographed. And
totally.
What's going on here?
I think it was a crazy, like, the creation process was so wild because of that. It was like everybody was... Yeah, just trying to find their way through this, some really interesting, challenging improvisations and sets of rules that William would throw out. I thought it was quite interesting at times, yeah.
And I think he's aiming also not only to confuse or distract or tempt us as performers, but also with the audience as well. So some of it, maybe we're not quite as confused now in some parts, mm-hmm. but I think with all of the elements coming in, movement and text, video, all that, all the props mm-hmm. And costumes that we're using can help to kind of get those words or those feelings to the audience as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
So how's the video part aspect of it? You know, just to kind of get an idea of how it's being incorporated mm-hmm. into the piece, how's the video and text? Well, you mentioned the text, but how's the video going to play out in terms of...
Well, there's one really interesting section that I'm dying to see. William has a section that he choreographed called The Running Path.
Okay.
And so he's made a really physical set of movements for the dancers who are literally like either walking or running, and he's created it so that it looks like some people are running a little faster and running, falling behind and tripping and all this stuff. But I'm really curious to see the video because what he's described is an actual like a road that moves with scenery that the dancers are going to be set in and running along mm-hmm. this actual path that will move. So that's a really cool one that I'm looking forward to seeing.
That's awesome.
What about Temptation? I wonder how he's going to do that.
Any Temptation one that springs to mind?
We think of...
Oh, well, the Forest of Desire. There's a beautiful...
So a bit of eroticism within
Yeah,
them.
I think... let's just leave it at that. I think there's going to be a little bit of eroticism, yes.
Well, the way you
That's
said
you gotta
that,
come, you gotta
a little
come
bit
see it.
Could be really open to interpretation.
You'll have to come to the show.
That's right. Well, you mentioned some challenges in terms of working with people and the distractions mm-hmm. and some of the direction that William would throw at you. Like, in terms of, I guess, your personal internal process as a dancer, what was that like? Where did you have to draw on mm-hmm. to be present for this piece? And
I feel like the process kind of came in layers for us. Mm-hmm. A lot of it really started with movement and kind of those... distraction at its kind of simplest term, like literally mm-hmm. distracting somebody while they're moving. And then more and more elements came in. He'd let us know more about the visuals that are happening while we're dancing. He'd bring in different props and different costumes. And then we would play with different orders of where things lie. So I think it was all kind of an evolution for us. For me, I still very much feel like it started with the movement, and that's my number one way of communicating. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of took some homework, I think, on our part to find a through line for the piece and what individually we're all trying to get across.
Mm-hmm. And then I think that during the process, we experimented quite a bit. And for me personally, I wasn't always quite sure what William wanted, but I think it was just that thing of being a dancer in a process of just throwing something out there and not being attached to it and seeing where it lies and if he's going to grab it or if he's not. And just playing around.
Yeah. Well, that's the best part, right, of creating, is just playing around with each other, playing around with the concept or the idea.
And I trusted the performer so much, I have to say, in the room, that I was willing to do a lot. So
That's when some of the best material comes out, right?
Yeah. Lastly, text. What exactly is the text? Are you speaking it yourselves, or is it voiceover?
For the most part, we're speaking it ourselves. There's one section where the text is incorporated into the score and into the visuals. Everything, actually, I do the least speaking in the piece, but everything else is spoken by the dancers and was written by one of William's friends, an actor and a playwright.
Okay. And lastly, the music. I said lastly before, but realized that
second
we
lastly.
Haven't... second lastly, we haven't mentioned Andrea Rocca's soundscape. What is it?
Yeah. So Andrea is a friend of William's who still lives in the UK, so he and William communicate through email, and he has never been to see any of our dancing, which is really interesting. So they have a cross-seas collaboration, and this guy does everything, oh my god, it's such a range of music, from like, you know, hard sort of techno-y sounding stuff to like very beautiful serene kind of stuff, like just mm-hmm. lots of different instruments. It's all over the map. It's really quite amazing.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And 8 Ways from Mara runs Thursday, October 20th to Saturday, October 22nd, 8 p.m. And I gather there's another show now, right?
Yeah, we added a matinee Sunday the 23rd at 2 p.m.
Okay, and that's at the Harborfront Center's N-Wave Theater, 231 Queens Key West. And go to www.danceworks.ca for more information on tickets, etc. And William's site, I can't remember.
Google Zata Om. You'll find it.
Zata Om. Actually, zataom.org. O-M-M. Okay. Coming up, we go from elemental forces to four mad humors. Or is it, how many humors were they? Anyway, we're going to find out here when we talk to Jerry Trenton here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Welcome back to Evie Dance on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Roshanik Jaberi.
I'm Ted Fox.
And we're back. We're going to speak with Jerry Trentham, Artistic Director of Pounds Per Square Inch Performance, who's going to be talking about Four Mad Humors, taking place November 2nd to November 5th at 8 p.m. at the Theatre Centre. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Welcome. So we're going to, before we jump into speaking about the piece, let's talk a little bit about you and your background.
My least favorite subject. about me, what would you like to know? Let me see. Well, I'm a choreographer, a bit of a writer and director. I perform in this piece as well. As well, my company is producing it, so it's a pretty heavy load right now. So I feel like I'm sort of disappearing into the work. So I've had sort of a long history in Toronto, in dance in Toronto. I danced for Dance Makers for 7 seasons, and then after that I decided to head off to York University and study theater and voice and speech and theater directing. I did a number of years after that teaching at different institutions and working on my work, and now I'm back working on my creative work and working with my company full-time again. Yeah, so that's sort of
the summary
the quick
version.
Lowdown.
Well, how did it feel to talk about yourself a bit?
What's that?
How did it feel to talk about it yourself a little bit?
Oh, it's not bad, but it's funny. It used to be so much easier.
Oh, really?
When I was younger, it seemed to be so much easier. Now it's a little...
Because you have a lot more to talk about, right?
But yeah, there's more to talk about or choose from.
Right, right.
I don't know. You know, it's a long life by this point.
Well, that's anyway. Great. You're doing some amazing work right now with this particular piece.
Yeah, it's a real challenge for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
some really beautiful things are going on. So.
So the very quick version is it's four cities and four solos. You can fill in all the rest of it.
This time around.
Yeah.
This time
it's
around.
Way too complicated to describe. I keep telling people to just come to the show. It's really, really hard to describe it.
But it's a really neat concept that you have. So.
Yeah, it came from originally being in the studio. I'd be in the studio in this studio and often alone because I've been working on solo work quite a bit over the last number of years. And being in the studio alone and, you know, with the four walls, maybe a bit of light from somewhere if I'm lucky enough to be in a nice open studio. And I started wondering about what happens, like how am I engaged with the rest of the world while I'm in this. You know, we talk about being connected to each other and all that sort of stuff and being part of a whole. And so I started wondering, so how does that affect my creation within the studio when I have these walls? Often we go into the theater, we set ourselves apart from the rest of the distractions of life, and we put ourselves in a black box and we start to create within that space. So I became very interested in how I'm affected by what else is going on in the world, you know. And for me, over the last number of years, there's been just a different kind of relationship to the whole world and with media and our change, our use of the internet and a different kind of community. I started thinking a lot about, you know, how am I related if there is this communal experience somehow in our bones or bodies. I sort of wonder about, you know, how I'm connected to another country, whether it's what's going on in Rwanda or whether it's something that's happening in somewhere else in the world, and how does that come in or affect me in the studio? So that's when I started talking to my friend Jamie O'Neill, who's the media artist who helped conceive the idea of the four cities. We started saying, well, what if we do live feed between different cities and play with that idea that when we're in the theater, part of my job, I think, as a choreographer is to create something that is compelling enough that you're completely immersed in that world of the piece. So how could you also become aware of what else is going on somewhere else at the same time? So that's where the idea came from.
Okay. Now, you base this on the Elizabethan humors, which I believe people actually thought during that time were part of the body, right?
Yeah, they took them very seriously back then. If you were a little bit too sanguine, meaning that your cheeks were red and ruddy, you were maybe a little bit, they would call it sort of chronically cheerful.
Or inebriated.
Or inebriated, perhaps. Or, you know, that sort of intense sensuality or sexuality or being oversexed or something like that. You know, and so they'd take you into a room and the physician would bleed you and then you become less red. Obviously, because you become anemic and something would be solved.
Wow.
Now, that's not the only thing. There's some really great underlying principles within the humors that people still use in terms of naturopathy and things like that. Some of those, the idea that what we put in our body does affect our not only our physical presence, but possibly our disposition. And they were related to the different dispositions. And so I thought that this was I've always been interested not just in the humors, but in the way that we carve up in Western culture our our world into fours, constantly into fours, whether it's four movement patterns like Rudolf Laban, space, weight, time, and flow, or it's Carl Jung in psychology, or Myers-Briggs tests. All these things are divided really into categories of four, so many things. And so I became very interested in there and started to look at the relationships between all those, including the four humors. So this goes...
I think we've
just lost him temporarily here.
But we're getting him back. So
yeah.
Actually, one of the things when we get him back, one of the things I wanted to speak to him about was, it is true, when I was reading about the piece, I don't know if you felt like this, Ted, but it was kind of, it's very difficult to describe in words. And what I found fascinating about it is not just the fact that there's video elements involved, but the interaction of the dancers with the video. So it's almost as though there's this virtual solo happening at the same time there's a live performance.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so that, I mean, hopefully when we get him back, I'd like to talk to him a little bit more about that. But
And the intriguing thing is how you react to a screen, because you're going to be watching Buffalo. In this case, it's Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was going to ask him, how did you determine which city gets which humors? This is going to be, you know.
Okay.
Right.
We have you back. Great.
I'm back. Sorry about that. Yeah.
My gosh.
All these questions.
So answer, maybe I got in there, just you heard that. How did you determine which Buffalo got what humors?
Well, yeah, because I didn't want to insult the city. It could be really bad. I mean, there's good and bad to each of these different humors. Melancholy isn't just, depressive. It's also very thoughtful and is akin to sort of the artist in the Elizabethan days. I decided that I wouldn't do that. I decided to go to the cities and start creating the pieces in the cities with the performers, and then between the city and the performer and myself, the humor actually started to arise. The solo arose in that city. I didn't decide. I took a look at them afterwards and said, well, this one is really going in this direction. And some of that had to do with the performer, but also a lot of it had to do with the experiments that I did within each of the spaces in the different cities. Mm-hmm. I'd have the performer move around the space, and I'd find out which directions and which parts of that space were more melancholic or more choleric or more sanguine, more air-like or more earth-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually went into this with a lot of questions about how the humors relate to each other, and if we push someone into a humor right to the edge, where do they go? Do they go through that into a balance between the humors, or do they, it seems that they actually followed into another humor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the pieces are created. Each of them go through all the humors a little bit. They're in relationship to the other humors, but they also end up in another humor by the end of their solo.
Well, you started this process 5 years ago, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously there's so many layers to it. as I was speaking to Ted when we lost you there for a minute, I was really fascinated by the fact that it's not just incorporating video into a dance piece. It's a different, whole different twist on it with having like a live solo and a recorded or live feed, right? Live feed,
yeah.
Solo happening at the same time. So it's sort of like a whole performance happening with live and video. And so maybe you can describe that a little bit if it's possible.
Yeah, that's probably the hardest part
to describe, right?
get into. But it's okay. I'll do my best, and then maybe you can help me clarify it. It takes a number of projectors and computers, that's all I know, and I'm trying to find them all for all the cities. Essentially what happens is you see the live solo in front of you, a 45-minute solo, first Linnea Swan, who does a brilliant version of Phlegmatic, Shades of Blue, a beautiful solo. She's just stunning in it. And then there's an intermission, and then we have my solo in the second half of the evening. While Linnea's solo is going on, there is scenic projection behind her, which sometimes includes the live feed from the other city or images from the live feed of the other city. But along the side of the stage is also what we call a quad screen that has the live feed of her performance into her section of that quad screen, meaning for the four humors.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the top of that screen is the performance in the other city live. So you can witness what that other person is doing at the same time.
This is
In the middle of that screen are pre-recorded versions of what's going to happen in the second act in the other two solos. And so, and that flips around in the second act, so I and Jim Morrow, the Chicago solo, is we're the live feeds, and the other two that you've seen earlier in the evening become the pre-recorded feeds. But you can look at the solos in relationship to each other. So there's lots of choice for the audience. The audience can be composing their evening in a way. I think the solos are quite strong, so you do get drawn into them over time, and we are careful not to stomp all over that experience, but you also can glide over and see what is happening.
Wow.
And it's sometimes we draw your attention to that.
It's
incredibly complicated project, I tell you.
It's probably complicated to describe. That's why we definitely have to come and see it to get a sense of this experience. But it sounds really, really neat and fascinating. Now, one last thing before we wrap up, actually.
Okay.
Another interesting element was the relationship with the audience. You're doing some sort of exchange between the cities where they meet in Niagara Country.
Yeah, well, what can happen is because I've done it in cities that are fairly close to each other, Buffalo and Toronto, Buffalo's only an hour and a half away, there are a group of people, board members, things like that, that are going to opening night in Toronto and then heading down on the Saturday to see the other two solos in the other city, to see the other two live.
Mm-hmm.
After people see the two solos, they will want, essentially, that's what we found out in the workshops. They really want to see the other two solos. Sometimes that has to do with, but you know, you're trying to look, you know, at your relationship to the solos, and when you see all four, you see that. But on the way down, those people will meet up from the Buffalonians coming up to Toronto that Saturday and meet in Wine Country, have a glass of wine with each other, talk a bit about the show, and then head up. And that's completely based on, you know, the people who want to go or how many people want to caravan down. My board is arranging that.
Nice.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jerry. This show sounds really amazing. Really intricate, challenging, amazing, and awesome, and everybody should see it.
Yeah, and if they don't make it to Toronto or Buffalo, then we go to Montreal and Chicago and do the show, the live feed between those two cities in the following week. So they can always have a nice trip to Chicago. It's a great city.
Great. Okay, November 2nd, November 5th, 8 p.m., Theater Center, 1087 Queen Street West, Dover Court, right? Yes.
Yeah.
And thanks very much again. And coming up, Serge Benetton here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Thanks.
From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Only one day left to enter into the early bird draw. Become a member of CIUT 89.5 FM today and get entered in to win a Sony Center for the Performing Arts prize pack worth over $1,200. Donate with PayPal or credit card on our secure server at www.ciut.fm. CIUT Fall Membership Drive 2011 is happening October 17th to the 23rd. CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 25 years from the roots up.
Hi, welcome back to Evidence here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox.
And I'm Roshanik Jaberi.
And on the line now from Montreal, I believe, is Serge Benathon, right?
Oui, bonjour.
Hi. Now, you're here. You're going to be talking about a show called The Neat Strange Music of Ahmed Hazan. Uh-huh. And I'd like to begin, Serge, by talking a bit about him. Anything you because you work with him, you knew him well. Talk about him and why this benefit's happening.
Well, I think it's very hard to talk about Ahmed because, in fact, he was loved by a lot of people because there is one thing that Ahmed was, I would say almost famous for. It was his openness to people. The incredible capacity of listening to people. So when we work together, I have to say, I just had to tell him my story on the story that I wanted to throw in the piece. And he listened to it and took it and digested it with his own story. And the two stories merged and it became the piece. And that was very beautiful. I think it was. I think he was a very tender man, and for me, this capacity of listening was extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Hazan passed earlier this year.
Yeah.
He had been struggling with MS,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very fascinating person. He was an advocate for so many different causes, and that really manifested in the work that he dedicated himself to.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like for you doing this tribute, sort of being involved in this tribute for him? Because you had a pretty good relationship as well, right?
Yeah, I have to say that we were not closest friends, but mm-hmm. we had a deep relation in terms of collaboration, mainly for this work, because I think this work was bringing a lot from him and from me, and so there's a lot of things mixed. What was extraordinary also, it was that with the piece, when we created the first part that ended up being the last part in the piece, Miriam Hassan also was involved as the singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all this this little rivers of life that was mixing on the on coming out on the discovery of Miriam as an extraordinary singer, really translating what the piece through this voice. So Ahmed was able to see all that on the as the composer that he was. But in terms of the advocate, I have to say, when we started to create the two other parts of the piece, Ahmed was already in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
On the company, Dance Makers was still at the studio on Dupont, and we had to move to take him from the street to put it in the freight elevator and bringing up to the studio and putting it. So it was a big ordeal to kind of make him come to the studio.
Right.
It was extraordinary. In fact, I think I can say in my whole life, maybe I met another person seeing life like him. Maybe. It was so extraordinary that never Ahmed had sad or disobedient or comment. At the contrary, even when he was in this situation where almost the ridiculous was taking over, he was able to laugh and make people comfortable. And so it was truly, truly, as a human being, phenomenal. And people could say that I'm saying this on the radio because it's the tribute thing. The incredible thing it is that it was true. Like, he was a very special man with his relation with the world. And I believe that his music reflects this incredible depth that he had on forgiveness, on gentleness,
Mm-hmm. Now, the piece that you are going to show is Sand. And
yes.
That was done when? First time round in 1998 or something? You can't remember?
I can't remember. I'm so sorry. I forgot the year.
It says 1997.
I just know that we won a Dora Award for it. So there you go.
That's right.
Yeah.
Actually, you had for your work. I mean, you've had 12 Dora nominations, and piece was one of two that won for outstanding new choreography.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
And you're working this time around with the graduating class at the School of Toronto Dance Theatre.
Yeah, and it's quite marvelous to see students diving in this piece. And because the piece is very physical, but also the piece asks for a very strong self-presence and almost attitude on stage. And it's great to see them opening to that. And,
Now, this was originally made as a reflection of your father's Algerian heritage. Could you talk about that for a bit?
Well, it's complicated always because half of my family is from Algeria, and you live with two worlds a bit in your life, and then I wanted to plunge my hands in this the music that we were hearing sometime at the house, or my grandmother. So it was to open this door that I had to say for many years I had closed, because I don't know, I started at 18 with Roland Petit in a ballet company, and I was not truly thinking about that. But with time, we all know that route comes up, right? It was time to talk on that. It's wonderful because we performed it in Cannes, and my parents and my father was able to see it and loved it. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's one of my great joy in my life.
Now, what was it? What has it been like remounting it? Because you created this piece, that's been a long time ago. So, from the first time you created it and it was put on stage to remounting it now, what do you think the changes or the evolution of the piece has been, maybe even your personal journey with it?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I could never have remounted it if Julia Aplin was not with me, helping me. And Julia was a dancer with the company for a long time, and so it's really great to have her on the. And I have to say, there is a moment where you look at works like this, and you can stop it. There is a distance with it. It's a long time that it was created. It's the first time that I look at it again. And at the beginning when we started to remount it, at the beginning I felt, well, maybe I would change this and that, and make it a bit more actual, like more where I am right now, and things like that. And more the dancers were getting into it. I have to say that I changed nothing. I think the piece, if the dancers, because it's an opportunity for these dancers also to approach a certain physicality.
Mm-hmm.
If they already as it is, it's a big challenge. And I realized that I had nothing to change, which at the end of it, I was quite surprised. I thought, oh, okay, it's old like that, you know.
Well, it's always it's always a temptation, I would think, for a choreographer to, when you're revisiting a piece, to want to change some things, right?
Yeah, but I have to say, I'm a choreographer that I create. I am not interested to the creation to be frozen after it's created. So even after the premiere, even in the weeks of performance, I keep changing. And if we come back months later, little things will change. And like I think it's, for me it's normal. I think it have to do this. Like your thought as a creator, or my thought as a creator, are not frozen. The essence of what I try to say to achieve is very, very definite and clear. Mm-hmm. But how it's coming out with time, with every day that I live on this planet, you have to change. You don't think totally like yesterday.
And exactly.
So the essence of the work, the essence of a moment, the essence of a second, the essence of a relation between two dancers, this will stay forever because it's exactly what I want to say. But things can transform on the, you know, and then even after, for example, when you have another dancer doing the piece, it's good that the dancer go back to the piece, to what was the piece. But it's very important to give a chance to the dancer to digest the piece and have a chance to be its own interpreter.
That's what exactly what I was going to ask you. I mean, the dancers, I'm assuming, are dancing it very differently in terms of what they're bringing to the movements, they're bringing to the piece, even though the essence remains the same. So you're happy with the direction that it took in terms of the emotional connection?
No, I think I am happy. I would say that next week when I see the show. You know, like this. Still, such a huge step between the studio and the stage, and the people open even more. But no, I think it's very challenging. I think people are embracing it, and I think as artists they are doing what they should do, and they do it with courage. And so it's marvelous. You see, I hope that the piece will be beautiful because it's an homage to Ahmed. So I hope that the work that we did together will still show.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the students, it's not that I have no expectation because I don't want to or things like this. I think the principle is the further they can go each individually with it, that's what it is, and it's great already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn a piece that dancers have done with the choreographer. When they knew this choreographer, there was a relation with this choreographer. They do it in a few rehearsals. You know, it's complicated. Like it's, mm-hmm. But I think they are. I think they are in a great path. And then the piece, you know, it's them, it's the music, it's Miriam. Miriam is going to sing live. That's the power, the true river of force and the on strength is what the spectator receive as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And you should also just mention that Mother Tongue, which hasn't been seen in Toronto since 1997, the World Beat Band will be involved too.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Serge, for coming on.
You're welcome. Okay. I'll certainly maybe see you next week.
Yes, you will indeed.
Okay.
The Neat Strange Music of Ahmed Hazan. It's a celebration of his work, and it is curated by Peggy Baker, his wife and longtime collaborator. And it features works from other choreographers as well, Peggy Baker, Peter Bingham, and Robert DeRosier. Strange Music is part of the Abilities Arts Festival. It's an annual multidisciplinary showcase of artists with disabilities, now in its ninth year. And this year's festival incorporates a month-long interactive photography installation, film series, and children's festival. Okay, and Strange Music runs October 21st to 22nd at the Betty Oliphant Theater. And for information on the whole festival, including deep music, go to abilitiesartsfestival.org, and you'll get all the information there. And remember, this entire show in a few days will be up on our website at everydanceradio.com. Also, we'd like to thank Jerry Trentham, Artistic Director of Pounds Per Square Inch, talking about Format Humors. Takes place November the 2nd, 2 5th, 8 p.m. at the Theater Center. For more information on them, go to theatercenter.org or poundsperscuareinch.net for the whole company and details on how they set this whole thing up, which is really fascinating in itself. Also, Kate Flankland and Heather Barry McPhail, who were here to talk about the William Young presentation of Eight Ways from Mara, which runs October 22nd at Harborfront Center's N-Wave Theater. And just go on to ZataOmm, that's ZataOmm.org for information about the company and about tickets and other DanceWorks program. Go to danceworks.ca, as this is a DanceWorks Main Stage Series event. Now, next week here on CIUT, it's fundraising all week, and our fundraiser is next Sunday at 9. And we urge everybody to try to donate well in advance. We need to meet our minimum membership goals. CIUT needs to keep broadcasting, and it needs your donations, and we need your donations for the show. If you like the show, if you love our content, and right where Sanic, they should definitely donate so that we can still be on in the following weeks to give you dance coverage that is now going both locally and internationally. Recently, we've had students, graduates from School of TDT, coming on the show talking about how their career has developed over the years. A few live in UK. One has been interviewed from LA, who's now prominently established there, and others in Newfoundland, etc. So do donate. What you do is you go to CIUT.fm, and you go to donate, which is on the right-hand part of the screen, and you donate, and make sure you mention your favorite show as Evidence. And I think that it's really necessary that we get the donations in advance.
So yes, please, please. We need the support of the dance community.
In Toronto, yes.
In Toronto, and dance enthusiasts, dance lovers. This is an opportunity for us to keep the show going, you know, maintain this platform for all the artists to come and promote themselves, speak about their work. So it's very important that you support us so that we can keep revisiting you every Sunday.
Right. And we do need some donations from people from the Toronto dance community. We have like to thank those who have donated from outside Toronto. We've had quite a few of those, and thanks very much for all those, a few in the Toronto so far, who have donated. I'm Ted Fox.
And I'm Roshanik Jabray.
And Dennis is on tech here. Yay.
Thank you, thank you.
And we'll all be here next week with Samara Thompson and special guests on Evidence and CRUT 89.5 FM.